Jesus and his disciples left from there and began a journey through Galilee, but he did not wish anyone to know about it. He was teaching his disciples and telling them, "The Son of Man is to be handed over to men, and they will kill him. And 3 days after his death, the Son of Man will rise." But they did not understand the saying, and they were afraid to question him. They came to Capernaum, and once inside the house, he began to ask them, "What were you arguing about on the way?" But they remained silent. They had been discussing among themselves on the way who was the greatest. Then he sat down, called the 12, and said to them, "If anyone wishes to be first, he shall be the last of all and the servant of all." Taking a child, he placed it in their midst, and putting his arms around it, he said to them, "Whoever receives one child such as this in my name receives me, and whoever receives me receives not me, but the one who sent me." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise you, Lord Jesus Christ. I want to continue my reflections a little bit on the path of Christian wisdom. I highlighted it briefly in a few of the homilies here, and then last week back home in my home parish, I did as well. So you'll get the continuation. You can go back and listen to the other one on YouTube if you want. But St. James is who we're going to focus on, that second readings. He's one of the most practical of apostles, and I love his letters, full of wisdom. His letters to the Christians, which is we've been listening to over the last few Sundays, is really direct, right? And in today's passage, he kind of highlights two contrasting ways to live life, right? Obviously to motivate us to choose the path of wisdom. So I wanted to dig into that. The first way of wisdom is St. James specifies that this wisdom isn't just kind of worldly and a street smarts and clever kind of even that of an intelligent businessman or a devious criminal mind that kind of knows how to. He's talking about a wisdom from above, right? Which is hearkening back to last week when Jesus challenges Peter and saying, "Get behind me, you think the way men do, not the way God does." So there's a way that God thinks. There's a divine mind, a divine wisdom that Christ comes to teach us. And that's what St. James is trying to extol, a wisdom from above, God's own vision. And we follow this vision when we seek righteousness and peace, right? Righteousness, right relationship with God, and peace, that right relationship with ourselves and with others. And those right relationships are what really give meaning and direction. First from God, capturing his wisdom, thinking the way he thinks, and then letting that inform my righteous relationship with him and my peaceable relationship with myself, and then from there, outward to others. St. James is so convinced about this wisdom that he wants to explain it so well. He gives 8 separate terms to try to explain this wisdom, this path. I won't go into all of them there. You'll remember, though, first of all, he says, "But the wisdom from above is, first of all, pure, peaceable, gentle, compliant, full of mercy and good fruits, without constancy and insincerity," right? But I want to talk about one of those, right? That inconstancy, or rather what he says, without inconstancy. The Greek word for inconstancy is adiakritos, no? Undivided, so not broken up, not interrupted, consistent or constant. It's the quality of the person who thinks clearly, makes a firm and prudent decision, and then follows through. The wise one is the one who kind of reflects, sees, and is consistent and dedicated enough that once he's decided, he's on it, right? And he's faithful. It's a quality of a leader, but not just a leader of others, first the leader of oneself, right? He's not wishy-washy. He's not flip-flop, not back and forth, right? It frees us from vacillation or victimhood. I visited a friend in his office this past week, and he had in the reception all these Vikings, these symbols and then people's names on it. This is Viking ship. And it was the award that he gives to his employees. And he explained it to me. I said, oh, he said, I don't know, I came up with this thing, let's be Vikings and not victims. I said, well, that's an interesting concept. Like, let's be purposeful and go and not look for problems, but let's be resolvers. That's what he's inviting us here. The heart of wisdom is one that knows where they're going, right? Not wishy-washy. Another characteristic of wisdom is purity. St. James points out that wisdom is, first of all, he starts with this one, it's first of all pure. The Greek word he uses here is hagnos, which is meant fit for the presence of the gods. Obviously, they only use pure gold, pure silver, pure materials, because anything impure shouldn't be in the presence of the pure God. So wisdom is that purity of knowledge, that what God thinks, without other substrates, without other elements involved. It's just the pure truth, right? Think of a windshield, right? When it's clean, you can see purely, completely, without all the distractions of other little things stuck in the way, right, that distract or that obscure our vision. It's the path of wisdom. It's a path also of God's mind, which the apostles and the scriptures struggle with in the gospel, right? Last week, Peter struggled it. Oh, no, that shouldn't happen to you, Jesus. God forbid. Get behind me, Satan. That's what I'm trying to help you understand. The cross will be part of what God thinks. The wisdom of God passes through the cross. So many of us say, oh, how is it possible? Where is God? There's no way that. This couldn't be. It doesn't align with who God is. And Jesus is here to tell us. And that's why he wants to do this in silence with the apostles, because he wants to make sure they get it first without having to then explain it to everybody else. No, let's come away. Let me explain it to you. Make sure you understand. First Peter, and then the other apostles and disciples, and then the rest of the world. That's why he's helping them understand the wisdom of the cross, the divine mind. The other path that St. James talks about, which is the path he hopes we don't take, is the path of the passions. He says the self-centered desires, rather for pleasure, power, or popularity, right? And that runs throughout the readings. It's what the apostles are struggling with, talking about on the side, who's the greatest among them. It's like, no, that's the path of the passions. Self-interested import that you're looking for yourself is where James says, that's where all division starts. Where do your wars start? Where do your conflicts among you start? It starts in your heart with this path of the passions, right? And he talks about covetousness. Have we ever kind of wondered about the 9th and 10th commandments, the ones that forbid coveting things, your neighbor's goods, your neighbor's wife, etc.? Oftentimes when people are confessing, they're quick on, you know, honoring God, great. Honoring their parents, great. Telling the truth, not killing, great. But then they trail off. Like the coveting thing, I don't really covet people's things. I got enough. No, but St. James talks about this path of passions. What's he go to coveting? Desiring other things. You covet, but do not possess. You kill and envy, but cannot obtain. Right? You have this internal passion where you want it, and you want to take it by force. And you want to go get it for yourselves. And that's where division happens, right? But you don't receive it, right? Because you're trying to take it for yourself from selfish passion. But you're asking wrongly. How many times we say, oh, God doesn't give me. He doesn't always say, hey, you're asking wrongly. But it happens to us when people, when you know they're asking for another purpose. Hey, can I have that? He's like, I think I know where this is going. I don't know if I want to give it to you because the way you're asking or what your intention is, I think is selfish. But how many times do you say, if you're willing, be nice if you could. I'm not required. There's a purity and humility in the asking. You're like, oh, I'd love to. Sure, can I help? I had a friend of mine who's in a financial rough spot, texted me this week asking for some money. I was like, well, you must really be hard up if you're asking for money. Poor guy. So I was like, I checked to make sure it wasn't a scam. But when there's a sincerity, a humility in the asking, where I'm not, transparency, humility, like, oh, I want to help. So when we ask wrongly, it's when we have the intentions of selfishness or instrumentalizing the other to get what we want. That's where all the divisions begin coveting, desiring, wanting for ourselves without interest, kind of like the apostles wanting to be seen as the greatest. It's like, no, be like a child. Child, they're not necessarily schooled enough yet to instrumentalize, right? They can be selfish, but it's very apparent. And you're like, okay, we can work with this because then we can form that, you know. It's not the deviousness quite yet, right, that we learn with time, unfortunately. So today, the church is putting before us through St. James two ways, the way of wisdom or the way of passions, the way of self-disinterested love of the truth and purity and constancy, or the inconsistency and the slavery of self-seeking, right? We could think that James, maybe this is a useless reminder, you know, because he's writing to the believers, but it's not useless at all. In fact, it's the believers who need this message. Who does Jesus explain the cross, the wisdom of the cross, self-disinterested, selfless love? First, to his apostles. He pulls them aside. He spends quality time with them so they get it first. And James does the same with the church, with the ones who are listening to the reading. He's writing to them. And so today, we're speaking to ourselves, right? We're the first ones that need to pursue this wisdom of God. We're all still sinners, right? Engaged in that spiritual warfare, continuously surrounded by temptations. We need these reminders, right? Even if sometimes they make us uncomfortable. But in this Mass, and every Mass, and every sacrament, we're doubly blessed because we don't just receive a reminder about the path we should be following in life. We also receive divine strength. We receive the heart of Jesus. Imagine Jesus trying to explain this to the apostles. He knows eventually, not only am I going to explain it, I'm going to model it on the cross, and then I'm going to give them myself through the Eucharist to live in their own lives so that from within, from their own hearts, through communion, I'll give them the power to live this divine wisdom. Christ himself is the wisdom of God. He is the one who's ultimately the most disinterested, as we talked about, the most pure, the most consistent and constant, the most undivided, the most worthy of being in the presence of God. So as he does, let's welcome him with open and grateful hearts in this Eucharist. Let's renew our commitment to be his faithful friends, to be pursuers of his wisdom, to become like children, disinterested in hearts just for him. And let's, as we reflected on whatever steps we need to take to grow in this divine wisdom and to avoid the selfishness, let's promise him in our time of prayer in the Eucharist today, we'll take whatever steps necessary to build our lives on his divine wisdom. Amen.